Kia ora, te whānau. This podcast is a little longer than normal, so we've decided to split it in two.
So this is part one, and if you listen all the way through and you want the next part, sweet as.
Sweet. We're going to release them both at the same time. We just, you know, we wanted to commit to our, like, hey, 20-ish minutes while drinking a cup of coffee. So we split it in half, so it's real easy for you to decide if you want to do it one go or two. So enjoy. And now the podcast.
Coffee Time Theology. Yeah. Kia ora e te whanau and welcome to Coffee Time Theology.
Yeah.
I'm Grace.
And I'm Stu.
And we are your hosts, as always.
As always.
Welcome. So how have you been? Hope that you've been well. And we're back. Yay. For another podcast.
Oh, is that, are you asking me? Do you want me to answer? You're asking the listeners. Hi. Did you know that we have an Instagram?
I did, but our listeners might not.
Ah, well, I may have been talking to them, not you. This is the tricky bit of the podcast.
It is the tricky bit because you looked a lot like you were talking to me.
Yes. Well, I was looking at you.
Yeah.
And the listeners aren't here.
It's true. We need to make like a...
We should just get a little rubber duck and set it in the corner and we'll look and talk to the rubber duck whenever we're talking directly to the listeners.
That would indicate that you're not asking me if I knew that we have an Instagram. So you were telling our listeners about Instagram, Stu.
Yes, we have an Instagram.
Yes.
There's not a lot of content on it. It's mostly there to tell people when podcasts are up and a place where people can chat with us. So if you'd like to chat with us, if you have feedback on a podcast, if you have a request for a podcast, or if, I don't know, you're just bored on Instagram, check out Coffee Time Theology on Instagram.
That's where it is.
That's where it is.
If you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss, send them on in and we'll add them to the list.
Yeah, we do have a list. And today's topic comes from that list.
It's a little bit of a scary one. So we've had to write stuff down.
Yeah. Today, our topic is sex.
Ooh, scary.
No. Today, our topic is about sexual ethics, really. And how can the Bible, Christianity, God speak to a sexual ethic that's relevant for 2023?
Yeah.
Which is a huge question. So if this is your first time joining us, maybe pause it and go listen to
one of the other episodes. It's less scary.
Before we get to this one.
Here be dragons.
So forming a sexual ethic.
It's probably important to clarify that we are a married couple, so talking about sex is something that's not uncomfortable for us as people. It's not like we're just strangers that we're like, hey.
Hey, let's do a podcast.
You guys have to do a podcast and please talk about sex.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have any guests today. That might
probably kinda.
Actually, before we go further into it, one of the things that we wanted to just put out there, we're going to be troubling some questions as we always do. Around
definitions
and held sexual ethics and traditional sexual ethic of the church and all of these things. And we just wanted to start with a space of saying, lie in the sand. We don't believe that God is a promoter of sexual promiscuity.
Mm.
So the reason I say that is because as we start pulling apart some questions, as we start pulling apart some things later, you might go like, what are they promoting here? We're trying not to promote anything. Apart from asking good questions and hopefully discussing how God can be involved in forming a sexual ethic.
Mm.
But there is that space of it's important for us to state, you know, right at the beginning.
That we believe God's vision is for humans to have a healthy sexuality, but that doesn't involve necessarily promiscuity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that a healthy sexuality and promiscuity aren't the same thing.
Mm.
So just as a little disclaimer right at the beginning.
Especially if this is the first time you're listening to our podcast, you're like, what am I listening to?
All right. So that being said,
yep.
Like what is a sexual ethic?
Ooh, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, because how can we use the Bible to help us form one if we don't know what one is? Good question. Snaps for Grace. So the way that we look at and treat our intimate partners and the way that we think about and discuss sex would be our personal little sexual ethic.
Mm.
And everybody has one.
Yes. Yep. Definitely.
And for a lot of people in the last couple of decades, the sort of main ways that they're formed is by consuming pop culture, social media, you know, wider worldviews of sex and discussing sex with friends and the people around us.
Hmm. And I guess one of the common discussions in parenting or working with young people, you know, is talking about essentially a sexual ethic not informed by pornography.
Mm.
So one of the big spaces that we're needing to do some work in, perhaps, in the church with our young people is creating spaces to talk about healthy sexuality. Because in lots of places, I was at a professional development thing, where guys talking about pornography and talking about how young do you think you should talk to your kids about pornography? And he said, no matter what the age is, it's probably like way too old.
Mm.
You know, so whatever you've discussed, so we were talking about like 10 or 9, and he said, actually, like, the data people are starting to come up with is actually like 6 or 7, maybe even 5, not because they understand it, but to put the framework in their place that you can see in their brains to start the thing. I was like, hey, like, if you are exposed to pornographic images, if you're having these things, there's the idea of the real and not real.
Mm.
And so creating a space really early on, which is quite a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
That what is portrayed in TV, what is portrayed in movies, pop culture, what is portrayed in pornographic spaces, that's not real, you know, and framing it in the way of like superheroes, you know, or like stories on the TV. We can learn things from it, maybe, but it's not what we should apply to our lives.
Yeah. The relationships are fictional and the actions the people in those relationships take are also fictional.
Yeah. They're not instruction manuals.
And they're not portraying real life.
Yeah. Anyway, that's quite a deep, you know, like,
yeah,
quite a shocking almost statement to think about is like, actually, you should talk to your 6-year-old.
Yeah.
About just having that framework of like real and not real before the decision is kind of like at like 13 or 14 where they might think it's already real and you have to backpedal.
Well, and being able to say like, hey, just like Harry Potter doesn't portray a regular high school experience, stuff that you might find online doesn't portray a regular human experience. Mm. And that's important information and context to have.
Yeah. Informing your sexual ethic, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm. So boom, straight in there.
Straight in there.
You know, talk to your young people about sex and porn.
And that actually leads really nicely to another point that we have written down.
Yep.
Is that there are some really, really weird and concerning ways that Christians talk to their young people about sex. And a lot of those can lead to some very, very strange self-images and beliefs that people can hold about themselves that can cause huge amounts of doubt and shame and guilt and stuff like that, that causes trauma for people that lasts their whole life. And there are some very specific ones that I remember from sort of youth group era as being real conversations that real people had with me and my peers. Things like, hey, everybody, let's squeeze out this tube of toothpaste. Now, can you put the toothpaste back? No, the toothpaste has been squeezed out. Who's going to want an empty tube of toothpaste? Ha ha, surprise, you are the tube of toothpaste and that squeezing out of the toothpaste is the first time that you're going to have sex. And who is going to want anybody that's had sex before? Nobody's going to want that person. Yuck, that's disgusting. And that being a real life example of, you know, why you as a young person should abstain from having sex. And another one that was used was an example of having a rose and then the rose being passed around the room and everybody take a petal off the rose as it gets passed around the room. And then the stem being passed back to the leader who said, now, if this rose is your sexuality and everybody around the room has had a piece of it, now what's left for your future husband? It's just a stem with thorns on it and who's going to want that? So you have to be careful. You have to hold on to all of your petals and make sure that you don't use yourself up so that somebody's going to want you in the future and so that your value is kept intact. And that's just so weird and gross.
So weird and gross. So it makes me so like physically angry to kind of hear these stories, these like these things people use because like instantly we've just drawn a line in the sand that someone's worth is in their sexuality, is in their body, is in
their purity.
Their purity. You know, like this concept and like outside of everything else, that's so gross. You know, like
we've told like a whole generation of young women that the only value they have for a future partner is their virginity. And so once that's gone, there is nothing desirable left.
And like, as you've just said in that, like we've told a generation of women.
Yes.
That like I those aren't stories that I can remember being told, you know, like these are these weird things that at some point in time we decided it was a good idea to split guys and girls up and tell the girls that.
Yeah.
You know, like this is your worth. And I don't know, what do we tell the guys? I don't remember. It wasn't memorable. But in the space we've horribly gendered like the idea of sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, it is in a woman's value is in their purity, you know, and their what they can give to someone once. Gross. So gross. Blah.
Blah. Blah. It's gross. And I can tell that people are well meaning. That people are wanting the best for their girls and their daughters and, you know, wanting future relationships to be good and safe and happy. But surely there's a way of doing that which doesn't permanently damage their self-worth and their sexual ethic for their entire life, right? Surely there's better ways of doing that.
Yeah. And there's no doubt that sex is part of an intimate connection. Mm. You know, sex is part of forming an intimate connection. Healthy sex involves human connection, not just a physical act. So there is some potential well-meaning behind the gross metaphors.
Yeah.
But framed in a way that actually your value is in your purity, your body.
Yeah.
You know, like rather than you as a whole person are valuable.
Yeah.
Hey, and maybe it's actually okay to be careful and guard some of that stuff until you're safe and comfortable because it's real intimate.
Mm.
You know, and it builds connection and whenever you're vulnerable and intimate with someone, there's the opportunity for immense pain.
Yeah.
And so we have to be clear to guard that so you're safe.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's not about your value. It's just about your safety.
Mm.
You know, and I think this ties into, you know, how does the Bible help us form a sexual ethic? Well, like, the context of the Bible is ridiculously important.
Mm.
And, you know, especially if we look, actually not just Old Testament, but specifically if we look Old Testament, New Testament, if we look at the concepts around a woman's place, you know, like those societal norms we've left well behind.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that a woman's worth to her family is in the dowry.
Or the children that, or she'll the bear children in the future. That
she brings. Or, you know, any of these kind of things about like her worth and what she can provide is heavily tied up with her sex life. We've left that stuff behind, but it was a societal norm.
But it was a societal norm 2,000 years ago. That doesn't mean it needs to be normative for us now.
And so there is a danger, I think, in looking at that, looking at the norm there and going, that's what applies now.
Yeah, I actually don't want to base my sexual ethic on Abraham and Sarah. I don't want to base my sexual ethic on David and Bathsheba. While those are stories that are being told, they aren't necessarily stories that we should use as examples of how to build up our relationships with our intimate partners.
What some of that is missing is also the context that comes out of the Bible, that a lot of the sex in the Bible, maybe the majority of the sex mentioned in the Bible, isn't normative, isn't healthy.
Yeah.
A lot of it is recorded as
this is the brokenness of humanity. This is the
brokenness. I mean, you said David and Bathsheba just before. Yeah.
Well, and like I've heard that particular story portrayed in vastly different ways just over the course of my life. It's been discussed in both a, wow, isn't it so romantic that David saw this woman and then was willing to do anything for her.
Oh, that's so dangerous.
Including like murder her husband.
Yeah, like
all the way
abuse his power. Like, yeah, whoa.
All the way through to actually in this situation, David abused his power to force a married woman into a sexual relationship with him that she had no option to opt out of.
Mm.
And like those are very different readings.
Those are very different readings.
Of the same scenario.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people would call that a sexual violence relationship, which then is glorified in some
occasionally
ways.
Occasionally.
So not examples of good relationships, just examples of very human relationships. And there's a story in the New Testament of Jesus meeting a woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
And
handily referred to as the woman at the well.
Useful. And she is there drawing some water and he asks her to draw some water for him. And they have a conversation about her worth and her acceptance by the community. Because she's not accepted by the community because she's had X amount of husbands. The man that she's with now is not her husband. Mm-hmm. And she carries so much shame about that, that she is carrying out her household tasks at a time of day that none of the other women from the village will be there, so that she doesn't have to be looked down on because of the way that her life has panned out.
And in that space where Jesus talks to her, Jesus is recognizing her as a person.
Well, Jesus is saying, no, look, I see you. I see you, and I see that you are a valuable human, and you have so much to offer that isn't tied up to your sexuality. And she goes to the village, and she preaches, and she prophesies, and she becomes this powerful person for the gospel from being a person that is so ashamed that she intentionally avoids everybody. I think there's this weird thing about shame that's connected with sex in the Christian community. And it pushes sex into this weird place where we can't talk about it, and where if something's happening in our relationship and we don't know if it's normal or we don't know if it's okay, we can't talk to anybody about that. So we go online, or we go to watch a movie, or we Google it, but we can't talk to real life people about it because it's shameful, it's secret, it's private.
And it's a really weird space, especially given one of our examples in the Bible about healthy sexuality is Song of Songs or Song of Solomon.
Yeah.
Right? That is a, don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, a love letter?
A love song.
A love song.
Mm.
That is a love song that is unashamedly
sexual. It is a back and forth between two people who, while they're not equals in power and status, they are equals in the relationship, and they are equals to each other, and they are both portrayed as having a healthy sexuality and a desire for their partner.
Yeah, and in that space, there's not quite sexuality explored, but there is in the Bible this beautiful, intimate relationship where that sexuality is to be explored.
Yeah.
You know, within a safe space.
Yeah.
I think what's happened is the intimate nature of sexuality has somehow been connected to prudishness, in that because it's designed to be a private, intimate experience, it also has become something that no one wants to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, oh no, this is this intimate thing between me and a loving partner. I don't want to tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's embarrassing to talk about it. And that is compounded.
Yeah.
You know, and so like where there is healthy sexuality, it's still not talked about or celebrated, which is a weird space.
Yeah.
You know, then the flip side is like where we've gone to weird places, where you've been to a church where the pastor is like, look how hot my wife is, or, you know, like,
look at my super hot wife down there in the front row. I love you, baby.
Yeah. Like, you know, like the only thing I'm valuing about you publicly is your sexiness, you know, like, and you're just like, whoa, like, I don't know, there's a line somewhere in between those, eh? I've been
like, how about my super supportive wife?
Yeah.
How about my super awesome wife who helped me write the sermon?
Who I also think's a babe.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's this weird line of like, we're either like here being like, we cannot talk about, can't even hint the fact that we might have sex. You know, like, that's too much, you know, like over here. And then there's the other side that's just like, that's like, I'm just going to objectify.
I'm going to invite this conference of people to objectify my wife.
Yeah. And, you know, happens the other way around too. You know, like
my super hot husband.
Yeah. You know, all of these things. And it's this weird line because like we're kind of talking about inviting healthy discourse. Oh, yeah. That was a very academic word. Just discussion, you know, like,
hey, it's okay to talk about it.
It's okay
to
talk to your friends about your sex life, right? Hey team, just a reminder, we've split this podcast in two. If you're going to go listen to that second one, go listen to it right now. But if not, remember to take a deep breath.
Know that you are loved.
Drink some more water.
Have a great day.
Bye. Bye.
Here be dragons.
Here be sexy dragons.
Sexy dragons. Yikes.
Yikes. We should cut that.
What's the difference between a sexy dragon and a regular dragon?
Are you saying that all dragons are inherently sexy?
Well, if
it sounds like you're like, what's the difference between a sexy dragon and a regular dragon? Because all dragons are sexual creatures.
Well, you've seen Shrek.
Yikes. I mean, donkey. Anyway.
There's lots of dragon donkey babies.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a tangent.